For the week of February the 8th, 2013, we talk about further game industry financial woes, The Cave, and we answer some of your questions. Welcome to the 11th level. My name's Cole Ross.
David Meinsmith.
Ben Merkel.
And that pause there was because Dennis is not here. This is The Level. And we should say, Dennis, our usual co-host, he is not here because it is his birthday. And I think he's traveling tomorrow. So we want to wish him a happy birthday, everybody who's listening. So, yay!
Happy birthday, Dennis.
Happy birthday, man.
I thought that his birthday was in March, but that's you, right, David?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, so I felt really bad about that. So I did wish him a happy birthday. Now here on the show, dedicating time, you know, and that ain't free. It kind of is. I don't know. So if you want to give him and us a gift, you can go like us on Facebook. The like count a little bit low. We're not judging you. We don't want to tell you your business, but it would be a nice thing for you to do. That's facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. It's time for the brief. Things happen in this world, much to our chagrin, and we like to report on them in a succinct, sometimes manner. Does anybody want to volunteer to go first? If not, then I will go.
I was just going to talk about the BioShock Infinite trailer that came out. I think, is that what you're going
to
talk about?
No. But I'm interested to hear about it, kind of. But I will not watch it.
Okay,
if that makes any sense.
Go for it.
It's if it's worthwhile. What was in it?
It's. I'll just say succinctly that. Yeah, it looks cool. It's coming out in March, even though the release date for it on some websites say February. I guess I know a little bit more about the character's main intentions. I'll leave it at that.
Okay.
So, yeah. just a reminder, it's coming out. It looks cool, maybe.
That's your thing.
I'm really conflicted by it. I'm excited for it. I loved BioShock. On the other hand, some of the reviews I've read is that sounded like it's going to get real, I guess, political, which I don't need more of.
And BioShock wasn't?
BioShock was really, really actually no, but...
I mean, BioShock was, a criticism of objectivism, and you know, BioShock Infinite, from what I understand, it looks to be taking on like American exceptionalism or whatever. But still, it's kind of this, in both senses, it's like, you know, like what is wrong with isolating, you know, these parts of your society, right? So in that way, it's kind of political, but I think that. I don't know if anything that they're talking about is especially relevant to today's world. It's not like, you know, Homefront, right? Where it's kind of like press X to hop into a mass grave so those Koreans won't come after you. It's not ripped from the headlines, right?
Yeah, and I think like most games, those sorts of messages, you know, they're there as much as you want to look into them. So if you aren't interested in social commentary, I'm sure you can still play the game and just kind of ignore it pretty easily.
Yeah, I guess just BioShock 1 struck me as philosophical, not political. You know, it was about objectivism, the philosophy, not necessarily objectivism. The political, you know, specific politicians or whatever that are influenced by it.
Not objectivism. My coursework at Glenn Beck University.
Right, exactly. Whereas some of the stuff I've read for the new one, he's talking about, you know, I guess there's two factions. One that's maybe influenced by the Occupy movement, one that's maybe influenced by the Tea Party movement.
But that's like was Brink, you know, what was Brink hyper political? Because you could say that about either of them, right?
Did anyone play Brink?
I actually thought it was a pretty good game.
Yeah.
Although it kind of annoyed me that the anarchist faction wasn't more relatable.
Yeah.
In terms of like the first like several missions, they're like, you know, fighting for the good fight, you know, fighting for the rights of the underclass, stuff like that. Yeah. And then like halfway through, they're like, you know what? We're just going to nuke all the rich people. Yeah. It's like, you can't cross the line there.
All that I'll say, and again, you know, this is coming from somebody who's on Blackout, so I don't know exactly how influenced they might, you know, they might be by one thing or another. Like, BioShock Infinite has been in development for like a hella long time. I don't know if like they would have. I don't know that the timeline works out to where that was a conscious thing, where they could have made it like that. It's kind of like Dark Knight Rising, where people thought that Bane was a criticism of Romney. And B, that this was kind of like, oh, like maybe, like, you know, Occupy Wall Street. Like, this went into pre-production like a wicked long time before any of that happened.
Yeah, most of the stuff I was reading was just saying maybe some influence, was definitely not saying that was like the point.
What was the argument that Bane was Romney? I had not heard that before.
No, just the fact that Romney ran Bane Capital and Bane is a villain that was made in 1993, you know.
Yeah. I believe they're spelled differently. Maybe.
Yes, they are. So, who knows? Yeah, so, I don't know. Political games, they're a thing. But, I don't know, I'm still excited for BioShock Infinite.
Yeah, it looks like a lot of fun. And
I just love that aesthetic, though.
Dieselpunk.
Columbia.
Yeah, like...
Old revolutionary America.
It's like they have a heat seeking missile that instead of seeking heat seeks out like my taste in art. So like Art Deco for the first two, like awesome, great, and then Art Nouveau for this one. It's like yes.
And that's why you like Cincinnati.
Kind of, maybe, yeah. A ton of Art Deco stuff down here.
Very pretty city.
Yeah.
But.
I feel like it looks like Willy Wonka and the American Revolution Factory.
I watched that movie.
If that wasn't so long, it'd be the title. So I'll go into my story. You guys are familiar with Zynga, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How?
Facebook games?
Yeah. How can a company exist when it just like up and posts a $209.4 million loss in a year?
How did it do that?
It's the government,
I guess. So here's the thing. Like that was just 2012, right? 2011, they were in the red by $404.3 million. So things are looking up for them.
I thought they made like buku dollars with Farmville.
You would expect that, and they do. Their revenue for 2012 was $1.28 billion, which that's billing with a B, Jesse.
Yeah,
but like that's like up 12%. So they're making more money, but they're still losing money. Like, okay, so I guess they're losing less than they did that year, but it's like
that means they're still losing over $1 billion.
Your games don't cost shit to make. Like, yeah. I don't know your business, but like, look at them.
Could it be like one of those things where IKEA is apparently a non-profit because, you know, just because you don't actually make a profit doesn't mean you don't pay your CEOs $10 bazillion.
Right.
So could it be a similar thing where, you know, they're making more than they go in, than they bring in. They're just not making a technically making a profit.
I think it's money laundering. That's what I think it is. So
the mob moved out of Vegas and into the interweb.
To Zynga.
Well, like you guys know about Team Fortress 2, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like
is Valve money laundering? Because that would explain so much about Steam.
The Russian mob is actually using Team Fortress 2 items as like a money laundering kind of thing. So they'll take they will take their ill-gotten gains, buy a bunch of hats or whatever, and then trade them to somebody else on a server who will then, you know, sell those themselves.
Huh.
Yeah. I mean, and that doesn't even go into like WoW gold, you know, farming and things like that, and how that is being used by human traffickers to, you know, as a way to shore up their numbers, not in a direct way, but like kind of like, hey, you know, we're over here in China, we're going to put you to work farming gold for us so you can pay off your indentured servitude or whatever. It's real messed up. Like these in-game, you know, economies, you know, not only are like really interesting models for the real world economy, but also like crazy exploitable.
Yeah.
Just like the real world economy.
Well, so it is a real world economy. Go ahead, Ben.
With Team Fortress, I did not know about this. So can you buy and sell hats at the same price, or are they taking a loss for the laundering?
I think they're taking a loss for the laundering. They would have to be because Valve takes a cut.
Okay.
I've never gotten into the hat trade. Here it's a tough bracket. But Zynga is saying that their quarter one loss looks to be in the ballpark of $12 million to $32 million. Wow. That's just quarter one, you know.
Can you imagine how boring The Godfather or any of those movies would be if it was made nowadays?
It'd just be the
if
worst.
That's how people laundered money.
I mean, it would basically be Office Space.
Right.
Man, your business model is based off of bugging your friends on Facebook to give you a new radish hoe.
Yeah.
I know that none of this is new, none of it's insightful, probably none of it's even very funny, but it, like, when you see those numbers and, you know, the studio closures, you know, Zynga Austin and Boston, those are all bad news because people lost their jobs, but like, just look at how awful this company is managed, and just like, you just wonder.
What I don't get, and I realize this whole thing, like you said, came out a long time ago, but how aren't they the ones behind like the Sims game that I get random invites and stuff to?
No, like they're Cityville, and they canceled Cityville too because they don't have any money; they're not liquid. if somebody sends you an invite for something on Facebook, that's probably what it is.
Hmm.
Huh. Yeah. So I don't know. That's my story. How about you, David?
I've only got something really really minor. Did you ever see Hellgate London at all? Back in the day?
Yeah. This was made by some of the people who left Blizzard after Diablo 2 was put out. So they wanted to make a semi free to play. Not massive multiplayer, but role player shooter. So think like Borderlands. Yeah.
And I mean, it looked kind of cool, had an interesting idea, kind of an interesting story, but failed miserably.
Right.
And I think servers closed down in like 2008 or something.
Yeah, it was really short.
And apparently now, what, like four or five years later, it's maybe getting resurrected. In fact, apparently they're calling it Hellgate Resurrection. So I don't know. That just struck me as, one, I'm kind of glad because it always struck me as something that had some potential but never really went anywhere. And two, it's just kind of weird seeing someone reviving basically an MMO that's been dead for 4 years.
Yeah, it's kind of like, hey, guys, remember The Matrix Online? It's back in POG form. like, what?
You can trade your soul for it.
No, thank you. Thank you, Ben. that is such a salient reference, too. Is that like Kickstarter or what? I don't know.
I believe it was one of them there Asian MMO people.
Oh, okay. So this is a Korean venture.
Yeah, I think it's something like that. Korean-based developer Hanbit Soft.
Yeah. So they're like those pirates who would go to like ship graveyards and like requisition some like fallen scary vessel, right? You know, it's kind of like, oh, this used to be the jewel of the Spanish Armada, but you know, now we can take this and bring it back, and it's this shambling corpse ship that will, you know, be the terror of the Barbary Coast. But except they do that with IPs.
Yeah, basically.
Okay, cool. I just wanted to make sure.
In the spirit of THQ's death last podcast.
Yeah, I suppose. Interesting.
I got one little extra brief since we didn't, or at least I don't feel like you or I covered too much new ground in the sense of BioShock Infinite looking cool and Zanga being stupid. So
Zanga? LiveJournal was a lot better, but more people I knew use Zanga.
Was it Zynga? Is that it?
Yes, Zynga.
Excuse me, my bad. Fouls. One of the other stories I found was this is for anybody who plays Call of Duty, which might be nobody listening right now. But they came out with fake soda pops, and I don't know if this is going to be a commercial thing or if this is just a fan doing this.
Okay.
But it's different soda pops emulating the power-ups that you have during the zombies missions in Call of Duty. So check the link. It's cute if you play the game. But
yeah.
There's been several instances of this happening. I mean, the Eve Online had a in-game soda that actually became a soda, I think. And I think the Far Cry Nuka-Cola or whatever, make some of that?
Yeah, Fallout.
There are a couple of like fan recipes for Nuka-Cola. Yeah.
That's what I meant.
Yeah, like fan recipes, and you can print out labels and things like that. That is a thing. I remember like way back in the day, there was like Super Mario soda and pop, you know. Remember drinking that in my grandma's RV. You know, Luigi's was peach, and or not Luigi. Toadstool's was peach. I think Mario was cherry, and Luigi was like lime or like Sprite flavor.
Wait, Toads like was tiny. Peach? Not
no
Princess.
No. All right, Toadstool was pink flavored. it's artificial flavor. So like one was red, one was green, one was they probably all tasted the same, but because they had different, you know, labels, you thought they tasted different.
Yeah.
I had to introduce somebody who wasn't familiar with them, like somebody at work who was either too, like younger or older, like who was just outside the range. I had to introduce them to the concept of a squeeze it.
Oh,
yeah, right. He was
what's a squeeze it.
it was a drink that was popular when we were children. People probably packed them for lunch. It was a plastic bottle that you had to twist the top off of. And
oh,
it had colored sugar water.
Okay,
yeah, it had characters on the
mean,
side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, those were awesome.
Yeah, I know, right? So he was horrified by the idea. It's like, and he said that looks disgusting. It's like, yeah, the bottle kind of felt gross too. It was kind of like if Barbie shed her skin like a cobra and somebody picked it up and filled it with sugar water and then melted the top close with a lighter. That's kind of what the bottle smelled like.
And amazingly environmentally friendly.
Well, you know, that Barbie skin was just going to go to waste otherwise.
It's great how kids don't even think about that at all. They're just like, sugar, I want now.
this one has a face on it.
The grind.
We play games, and then we talk about them. I only have one, and it's very brief, so can I go first?
Absolutely.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. Over the weekend, I was really busy, but I did have time to play, amazingly, a 20-minute game. I know, right? Called 30 Flights of Loving.
Oh, that looks good.
It is. It's real good. Ben, I believe you have played its precursor because I talked about it and goaded you into doing so. Gravity Bone?
Yes, I did play that, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So this is a prequel to that. So you're playing as the same dude. It's in the same art style. It's very much the same type of game. And I use game, you know, lightly because it's more of a narrative experience that's about, again, another kind of heist. And this time it kind of like takes a Tarantino route and does things in a really nonlinear fashion. It's $5 on Steam. I was actually kind of shocked to find out. It was developed. It was basically requisitioned by the guys who run the Idle Thumbs podcast. And it was given out as was given out for people who funded their Kickstarter. And the music was actually composed by their lead guy, Chris Remo. It's super good. You know, like it's short. You have to be willing to pony up $5 for a 20 minute thing. You can go back through it, and there's more stuff that you don't notice. I played it like 2.5 times, just to see. But yeah, you just have to love that aesthetic, like that Prohibition era. Again, almost like an Art Deco kind of feel. The cube headed people with the wah 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 voices, you know?
Yeah, the Charlie Brown adult voices.
Yeah. And just the way that they tell those stories. Like it's excellent. It's a wonderful example of like what this medium can do, right? Without explicitly telling you anything, but just by the things that you do and the
contextual
things that you
clues.
Happen to see. Yeah, yeah. Just inferred story, implied story. It's neat.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I recommend it. Any questions about that?
No, it looks pretty cool.
I mean, I can give you a 20-minute walkthrough of it, but that seems like it would be.
I like the answer. No. No, I have no follow-up. Okay, okay. Sorry. No. I am not interested.
I'm going to do some audio theater here, okay? Listen to this. Hear that?
Are you unzipping your pants?
No. I'll do it again, but slower.
Are you slowly unzipping your pants?
Are you thumbing through a dictionary?
No. Remember when I was talking last week about the backlog, about my new way of trying to do it?
Oh, index cards. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I posted a picture on the Tutor, and I'll put a link to this in the show notes. But I have right now 69 cards. That wasn't intentional. bound with a binder clip, extending from the cave on Xbox Live Arcade right now and going backward in time to Xenosaga Episode 1. I don't have my Steam games in there yet because I need to find a definitive way to figure out when I bought those because they've been accumulated over a while. No classic games on this, so GOG stuff is out. But yeah, it's an order from the most recent to the least recent. And if you're interested in what the top three on the pile are, we have The Cave, Hitman Absolution, and Alpha Protocol. So,
oh, hey, I've played all three of those games.
that's a wonderful segue.
That is a wonderful segue.
You know, do you realize that your backlog is now, like, I think it's technically a life form? You know, it's self. No,
it's
because
sentient.
It's now self-replicating, you know, self-perpetuating, because by the time you're done compiling the backlog, there's now like two or three more things to add to it.
Okay, no. See,
and now you got to finish the backlog game. So did you make an index card for that?
What do you mean the backlog game?
The game that you're playing right now. Making index cards for all the backlogs.
No, that's let's see here. I just need to look. So in the time that it took me, you know, this was like a project that I undertook in the late part of last week. Let's see here. In the time that it took me to make this, I cleared one game from it. That was Resident Evil 6. I added one game to it. That was The Cave. Since 2011, which was when I last compiled this, I didn't have Xbox Live Arcade games in there. Let's see here. 16. I've added 16 games to it. That's substantial, but that's only because I've only really been gainfully employed for a year. So I've been on a bit of a spree of buying games. So like, I'm going to slowly work Steam games back into that. But right now I figure my plate's pretty full with console stuff. So
I was going to say that's also another segue point that I have too.
Let me stop. I'm going to put this away so I stop playing with it. So why don't you tell us about The Cave a little bit, Ben?
I will. Question first, though. Did you color code those games in the backlog?
No. Okay. It's the cards are the center. It's the back. It's the blank side of a card. The full title written out in pen. a Pilot G2.5 black, of course. In the bottom right, in parentheses, it's the system code. So for Xbox Live Arcade, it's XBLA. For PlayStation 3, PS3, on and on. And then the bottom left, if I have that information, the date that I bought it, so it can easily be reordered. Yes.
Did you make an Excel sheet copy of this so that you can easily rank it?
No.
The order. Oh, cool.
Well, no, it is LIFO, last in, first out.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
When you need to add something, I just put it on the top.
Okay.
Yeah.
Money Smith, was that a YOLO reference?
No, it's LIFO. Last in, first out.
It's a computer science thing. Okay. Well, whenever you're working with a stack.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's stacks.
tell us about the cave.
So a week ago exactly when we finished up recording, I was an addict, guys. I needed a fix. I needed a
yes,
video
you
game
were.
Fix.
you were looking for anything, dog. I'm sorry you didn't respond to your text, man. I apologize.
That's fine. Don't worry about it.
I was all anxious looking at places. Go ahead.
So in my fiending state, I drove to the nearest undisclosed video game retail store, and I went to purchase both The Cave and The Walking Dead.
Ooh.
Online codes for it. Walking Dead, they had one copy left, and somebody had reserved it minutes before I got there. So I could not purchase that at that time. So anyway, I ended up just getting The Cave, played it, and beat it in about 2 days, maybe, with all the characters. So the premise of this game, to give a little bit of explanation, is you go through a cave. You're walking through a cave, and you do so with three different characters, and there are seven characters to choose from. So anybody who can do division knows that it'll take three games minimum to go through with each character and experience their story. And so essentially the layout of the game is there are some stages with general puzzles, and then there are character-sensitive stages where you'll go through a place that's related to one of the characters that you're playing with.
Can I just say this? General puzzles was my favorite Civil War hero.
Also, I've got to suggest that for a title.
General puzzles.
I'm so sorry.
It's a platformer game, 2D, but it looks kind of 3D-ish, but there's no layers like in Little Big Planet, so it's officially 2D.
Yeah.
But however, yes, it's a beautiful game. If anybody who kind of likes the adventure games of like the 90s. I don't even know an example of one.
It's made by Ron Gilbert, who did Monkey Island and Maniac Mansion and you just get like all of those LucasArts kind of things, right?
Exactly. Yeah. The main developer worked at LucasArts in the 90s, and I think some of the other people who developed it also worked there with him. But so it definitely has that sort of feel from games of those days. But yes, it's incredibly compelling. It's fun to play, and it's pretty short, so it's not a huge time sink. For the sake of the viewer, the seven characters, they're all very larger than life characters, I guess is a way to describe it. There's a time traveler, there's a hillbilly, which is probably the weakest of the characters. There's a knight, there are a set of twins, there's an adventurer, which is like a female version of Indiana Jones, there's a Buddhist monk, and there is, let me think, there's a scientist, a female scientist. Okay, so I can remember all seven.
Are the twins one character or two?
They are one character. Since they're okay. Children, it's like two half people, so it's kind of like one.
Well, one rides on the other's shoulders, and they wear a big trench coat.
Yeah, exactly. that's your secret power. No. Yeah, so every character has like a trick or a special move of some sort. So for instance, like the knight has a like a invincibility activation sort of thing. But he stays motionless. And so one of the advantages is he can jump from any height, and if you activate it, he'll not die when he hits the ground.
Oh, wow.
The adventurer can get across gaps that have a hook above them with a whip, very much like Indiana Jones.
Of course.
The Buddhist monk can manipulate things with his mind because apparently they're Jedis.
because Buddhist people can do that. You didn't know?
Yeah, exactly.
You didn't take comparative religion?
Skipped out on it in college. Regretted it ever since.
Life is suffering and also sweet, sweet hovering. So in Sanskrit, suffering and hovering are the same root. So,
So basically every character has their own special skill. And then you use that in whatever stage they have to kind of complete the puzzles.
Right.
But it's very fun platforming. It's very, it's puzzles that are of the caliber of, at some points that are of the caliber of Braid or Limbo. I don't know if there are any that are as hard as the hardest of those, but, for the most part, it's pretty softball, but it's also, the way that the puzzles are set up in this game, it's really interesting because it's basically how things interact with one another. And so I guess that's why I kind of thought of the 90s games, like your point and click adventure games.
Yeah,
it's that sort of same type of problem solving where you have a set of items and you're like, okay, now how can this interact with the environment I'm in? And then you do that to progress through the level.
Right.
That said, yeah, the Cole, as a recommendation to you, perhaps, mm-hmm. First round, I would recommend playing as the twins, the time traveler, and then a third one of your choosing. But those two stories are fantastic, and those are ones that you don't want to miss out on.
So do you switch between the characters at will as they kind of go about their?
Yes.
Okay. And is every playthrough in the same like dungeon, the same cave, or does like it roll what you encounter based on who you have?
It's dynamic to the characters that you have. So basically the way it's set up is you will progress from start to finish or whatever, and a lot of times you'll walk by the stages, but if you don't have the character in your party, you cannot access them in one way or another.
So
an easy example is with the adventurer. You'll come to a place where there's a gap and a hook on the ceiling. If you don't have the adventurer, you can't get across that. If you do have the adventurer, you can, and then you can progress in that fashion.
How long is each individual playthrough, do you think?
Probably somewhere between like a half an hour and an hour.
Okay. All right.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize it's so short.
And do you get different stories by playing like with different combinations? So if I played with the knight, the adventurer, and the time traveler, and then I play with the knight, the adventurer, and the twins, do I get different interactions? Does that change the ending? Without spoiling, obviously.
Yeah. There are a few places where having different people in your party can kind of affect little things, but it's nothing major. So basically the way it's set up is the three characters you pick, you'll get their three individual stories, and then you'll get to the end of the game. So there's some interaction, and you'll kind of see where there are some places where, and a lot of them I just read afterwards and I didn't even notice that you could do some of the things you can. I guess that makes sense. For the most part, it's you get the three individual stories. I will say that all seven of the stories are very well done. The seven stages that are unique to each character, they're all very well done. Yeah. So there wasn't a single one of those that I was that disappointed by.
Right.
So they were all, well thought out puzzles, and a lot of them. And I guess one of the things with this is with each story, you kind of learn something about the character that you're playing as. Mm-hmm. And kind of the overarching narrative is you know, from the stories, you're kind of supposed to gather a moral from that, perhaps.
Right.
But I will try and make it as cryptic as possible. So you
know what, yeah.
But yeah, it's quite fun. So
cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. I mean, I just like it's sitting right there on my Xbox. I've just been so, I don't know, excuses. But I'm happy to have you vouch for it, especially as regards a story driven game. So neat.
Yeah.
It's available for everything too. It's on Steam for Mac and PC. I gotta tell you, you wouldn't believe that it's like you can get it on PlayStation 3 for like $14.99. You know. What? Order today. Get a free Costa. Yeah. yeah. No. <it's, laughs> it just point being, I've got it on Xbox, but like I could probably run it on my toaster. It's very available. Voice acting.
Yeah. What
voice acting?
I don't think the only speaking character is the cave itself.
Oh wow.
The cave talks for the if I did not mention that before.
Pro tip.
It's a large detail. Yeah.
I don't talk about work that often, but I need to say this because it might be out. I did a voiceover where I am a talking dog.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That dog is kind of awesome.
I don't believe you.
Oh man, the video isn't up yet.
Okay. Add it in the show notes whenever this gets posted. Maybe. If you feel okay with that.
Yeah. Okay. If it's up there.
Dog you. Oh, sorry.
Yeah. So that's a thing.
Man, that's pretty funny.
Now I'm curious. Sorry. A talking cave, a talking dog. Huh. Are any of the characters talking dogs?
There are no talking dogs in this game.
Is each individual twin four dogs in a human suit?
It's, yeah, two dogs each in per human. Yeah,
that's yeah, right. Okay.
But that is a nice question because the other game that I've been playing does feature dogs in it.
Okay,
what could I be playing? What, you know? All right, I'm gonna send the link and I want you guys to watch. This video, yeah.
The audio is going to come through on your channel, so
okay,
we can react to it in real time. Okay, Tokyo Jungle.
Yes,
that just sounds promising.
It's a loading. Okay, it's rated teen for blood, crude humor, suggestive themes.
Can you play as the elephant?
I'm not even there yet.
Oh.
Okay, the battle.
Oh.
For survival begins. Tokyo Jungle. Dystopian Neo Tokyo. What? When did this come out? The Pomeranian. Are you kidding me? Ready to move the city.
Really?
Family pride, the deer.
Wait, are we actually doing a chick versus a raptor?
The hyena, no laughing matter. The animation, this is so bad.
Yeah.
Like,
wait.
So if you roll as the chick, and I'm not talking about a sexy lady, if you roll as the baby chicken, like is that like
that's
playing Dark Souls with just a sword hilt? Oh, do you get to play as the Kraid as well? Oh my god!
No, it's actually a cameo by Snake.
Yeah. The one shit is
like literally you're playing as a snake.
Only the strong survive.
Alright, so
what did I just see?
Needs a little bit of explanation, yeah. So I was reading through 1UP over the weekend, and I was looking at the different reviews that they had, and I was looking in List View or whatever, and something caught my eye. It was a picture of a dog, a cute little dog, and the game had like an A- to it. And I was like, well, that's interesting. So I clicked on it. And so it's this game called Tokyo Jungle. I proceeded to watch like a half an hour video of somebody playing the Japanese version of it. And this was like maybe 4 or 5 months ago when it wasn't in America. It only came out in the last couple months. But so the premise is it's, yeah, a dystopian future in Tokyo, Japan. There are no humans left. They're all dead. And so there's just animals around in the place where humans used to roam. And so basically what you do is you kill other animals, you breed, and then you take over territory. And that's what you do. You pick an animal at the beginning and you do that. And if they divide it between carnivores and herbivores. So if you're something like a deer, you can't even kill anyone else. You have to run away and hide and then breed and then try and take over territory.
So it's like EVO, The Search for Eden.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. I have not played that.
It's an SNES game, except instead of being post-apocalyptic, it's like you go from, you know, protozoa in a pond up to being like evolved birdmen. It's real weird. We did it for Watch Out for Fireballs. So you played this?
Yes. No, I bought it and I have played it. Yeah.
What'd you roll as?
So there's two game modes. There's survival and then there's single player. And what happens is in the survival mode, your dog or character or animal or whatever only has a certain time period that it can live by. It has a fixed amount of time of life. And it's accelerated time. So like every minute might be a couple years. And then on top of that, there's three different meters that every animal has. It's a stamina meter based on if they run or dodge and jump. And they have a hunger meter, which they constantly need to replenish by eating other animals or eating grass. And then they have a life meter. If they get in a fight, they start to lose life. Or if their hunger meter runs out, they start to lose life as well.
Right.
Then there's also in the survival mode, different areas start to become more toxic. And so you start to lose – you can get poisoned and start to die if you stay in those areas for too long. So the way it works is by playing the survival mode, your goal is to take over territories, attract a mate, and then breed. And then instead of controlling one animal, you'll control 2 or 4 or 8 different animals. Oh. And then you'll take over more territories and fight more animals. And, I think there's 3 different levels that you can be. There's rookie, veteran, and boss.
What?
Yeah. So the more animals you kill and the more animals you eat, the more you rank up and your animal becomes physically bigger. And as you do different things in survival mode, like they have an achievement system that resets each time. But as you unlock achievements, it'll give you things like plus health, plus stamina, things like that.
Right.
And so the point of the game is you complete missions in the survival mode, and then that unlocks new animals that you can play as in the single player mode. So right now I can only play as the Pomeranian dog and the deer. The Pomeranian dog is a lot of fun to play with.
Yap them into submission?
What?
Do you just yap them into submission?
No, dude, you eat them. if you sneak up on an animal, there's this this icon of a bite mark that's in red that comes up, and there's 2 symbols like that, and they kind of circle around one another, and they'll kind of slow down and coincide for a second. And if you press the R1 button when they do, you get – it says clean kill and it shows you lunge and eat the other animal.
So you go all like Assassin's Creed on them basically?
Yeah, but feral style. Yeah.
Pomeranian.
Yeah, as a Pomeranian. Yeah.
So how do they explain the presence of raptors?
I haven't gotten there yet. So I – don't know yet, but I can't wait. And then also, as you like kill things or as you explore, you'll get like sometimes when you kill an animal, you'll get a package, like a gift package that opens up, and it can either be something like beef jerky, and that'll give you some sort of power up, or you can get fleas if you're a dog, so it might be like flea something or flea spray or whatever. But then sometimes what it is it'll be a clothing item. And so you can dress up the animals that you're playing as. So you could put like a tiara on your Pomeranian as he eats other animals. It's awesome. It's hilarious.
Do you buy this game?
Yes. Yeah. It's $15. It's on PS3 and it's PS3 exclusive as well because it's made by Sony Japan branch.
Yeah.
So this came out in Japan, yeah, like 6 months ago, and
it looks like a PlayStation 2 game.
No, yeah, the graphics are not great.
I know it's downloadable, but
well, I mean, let's be honest. Does this really look like something that someone pitched to a AAA, publisher? It's kind of weird.
They made it.
Huh?
But they made it.
Yeah. I heard only in passing that I think this was like a team's first game, and it was like just a small team within Sony.
Oh yeah, those kids—they're going places. You know, they just kind of... Wow. So this is like one step away from the great conflict prophesied by John Hodgman of the Judge John Hodgman podcast, also known as the I'm a PC guy and the author of Areas of My Expertise. In that book, he laid out a matrix of all the possible dramatic situations and conflicts in literature. It breaks it down into man versus man, man versus nature, man versus society, man versus himself, and man versus cyborgs. In the man versus nature category, he has things like, hunted by tornadoes, volcanoes come to town, wilderness becomes crucible in which asthmatic learns to grow a beard, snakes lie in wait, and ultimately the greatest conflict that could ever be written about but hasn't been done yet is all animals attack all humans.
Wait, so, wasn't that the happening or whatever?
That was trees.
Trees.
Oh, okay.
That was trees. So like
Shyamalan took man versus nature very literally in that one.
They're almost there. They've got all animals versus all animals, but I want to have like an aliens versus predators thing.
Man versus animals?
Just all animals. No, all animals versus all humans. I think that has to be as clear as possible.
Well, all right. So that's an easy fix because they're adding different add-on contents of different packages.
Still?
Yeah. You can check if you get the game.
Okay.
But they just add a human class, dude. Easy. Dream fulfilled.
But is it all humans? I don't know.
What?
But is it all humans? Oh. It's all literally every animal on Earth versus every human on Earth. Go. Fight. Let's see how this shapes out.
You basically want to combine, like...
It's not me. This is a man smarter than myself who's saying this is the highest conflict that we could ever chronicle.
So the greatest conflict would be if you combine like Modern Warfare and The Lion King.
Maybe.
Why is that the greatest conflict?
Can you imagine one bigger? I don't know. It's a comedy book. I just like the idea, hunted by tornadoes. Anyway, wow, that is a real gem, Ben. Is there a demo available on that?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
I believe maybe not. I don't know. I just bought it.
In the demo, it's a step down. You play as a chihuahua.
Not far off from a Pomeranian, but yeah. I imagine that if a Pomeranian is capable of a clean kill.
Yeah, dude. It can take down hyenas. It cannot take down alligators.
Kill.
Yeah.
Nor can it take down hippopotami.
Alligators are tough.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was the half game?
So I tried playing Dark Souls a little bit. I did not continue to go to the graveyard.
Okay.
So
cool.
I made more progress before I died.
Yeah.
But I still died. So
yeah, as you do. Where did you leave off?
The big guy on top of the bridge.
Oh yeah, yeah. The Taurus demon.
Yeah,
he's fun. You'll
see. I disagree.
Okay. Okay.
Did anyone leave you any helpful messages?
Like things like boss up ahead or
Bill's here. Okay. Yeah. That's weird. No. Tips, find the gold pine resin, and also remember that you can do a dropping attack.
Okay.
From the tower. Yeah.
Would you really use the gold pine resin so early?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I haven't warmed up to the game in case my tone could not convey that.
No, that's fine. But, that's fine.
I mean, I'll still give it a shot. You know, I'm not, you know. But, yeah, I just haven't had a positive experience with it yet. It's just been like, it's just seemed, I don't know. I guess I've been lazy about it because it just seems too difficult.
Give it until after the Taurus Demon, because I think stuff will start to click there. I probably spent about 7 or 8 hours grinding in the Undead Burg before I proceeded beyond that, and after that, pretty much everything fell into place for me. So
what's the Undead Burg?
That's the area where you're at.
Okay.
Yes. So I know that is the worst thing in the world to say. Not having fun. We'll keep doing that not fun thing until it's fun. You know, mm-hmm. Man, I really
taught you the definition of insane.
I really hated leaving my hand on that stove, but eventually it stopped hurting.
Because yeah. I had no more hand.
Exactly. Oh man, David, what up?
So I've been playing a lot more Far Cry 3. I'm about 2/3 of the way through it.
Nice.
The story is really, really good, but it gets crazy, crazy weird.
How weird?
Well, you know, the main kind of thrust of this story, it seems, is the main character is Jason, I believe, some guy. His transformation from kind of this sort of this privileged kind of bro guy to this like just ruthless killer. Mm-hmm. But the thing is that several times throughout the game you use various hallucinogens, drugs.
Yeah.
And so they kind of use all these you know kind of psychedelic images to sort of create this weird setting where it's kind of the point of the game is you can't quite tell if it's the story of a spoiled rich kid who is forced by circumstances to step up and become a hero, or if it's the story of a normal guy who's forced by circumstances to become a monster.
Every summary that I've heard of it puts it in the latter category.
See,
really,
I would disagree. I think it's kind of meant to be ambiguous. I mean, definitely that's a thing. Like, it makes it clear that's part of it.
That there's a transformation.
Well, it's definitely a transformation, but you know, it makes it clear that part of it is the fact that he he becomes a monster, you know, he becomes a killer. At the same time, I feel like it kind of tries to play around with making it less clear, because on the other hand, all the people you kill deserve to be, you know, deserve to die. You're saving people that deserve to be saved, you know, that sort of thing.
Right.
So, but I mean, just the way they present it's really weird. So, for example, one of the boss fights, your enemy
is this technically a spoiler?
I'm purposely I don't know. I'm not telling anything about the context. Basically,
that a cool thing happens can be as much of a spoiler as like why it happened. So I guess what I'm trying to say is before you go too much further, think about that.
Just cut that out. Things get really, really freaking weird.
Right.
Have we all played Arkham Asylum?
Yes, we have. Have you, David?
I've played a good portion of it.
Okay. So if he's more than a third of the way in, he's probably been to one of the Scarecrow segments, right?
Yeah, the Scarecrow segments are straight up what reminds me of.
Yeah, yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. Then, then you should not give too many details of it.
Yes. Yeah. Oh. So I apologize for slapping you down. Yeah, it's funny because, like, you know, most of the reaction that I've seen to this is relatively either really positive or it criticizes it for having too many systems. But like these little set piece for lack of a better word, these little set piece kind of encounters, like it almost seems outside of the scope of like what you would expect from the follow-up to Far Cry 2, right? Because, like, did it do that kind of interface, weird psychological stuff into? I mean, it was pretty much just, you know, malaria, and then your buddy right. can help you not die, right?
Yeah. Right. I mean, it really didn't do that in Far Cry 2. But I feel like what makes it work is just the fact that it does a very effective job of making the game come across as very surreal, very weird. Mm-hmm. You know, it makes a lot of the boss fights and stuff like that work a lot better.
Right.
It helps that the voice acting is just amazing.
Right.
And the other thing I'm really liking about it is the stealth system kind of takes getting a handle on, but you know, it's kinda like in most games, you know, the stealth system requires you to really be slow and systematic. But in this it's kind of the opposite where, you know, you stay out of sight because you're constantly on the move and being completely unpredictable.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, a given fight, I might, you know, come up to a camp and say, you know, use my bow to take out a sniper. And then one of the guards will notice the body and go over to investigate. But that leaves his partner without anyone watching his back. So I go up and take out his partner and then grab his partner's knife and, you know, throw it at him and kill him.
Right.
So it's, you know, kind of this thing where it's almost you create these chain reactions and you're, you know, running all over the camp, Assassin's Creed-ing people.
Yeah, well, I mean, it reminds me of Hotline Miami, where it's an order of operations thing. It's kind of like, okay, how do I approach this in such a way that I can make them play into my hand, right?
Right, right. Yeah, it's exactly like that.
Hmm.
And I know, it does a good job. It's not exactly, I guess you could almost say it's not so much stealth as it is like a guerrilla warfare type thing.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a couple of weird things in the story. Again, I'm not going to spoiler, but I mean, I can understand, you know, some of, you know, just there are some weird things. The island, you know, the natives, some of that's maybe a little stereotypical, although I don't think nearly as much as people make it out to be.
Mm-hmm.
The animals on the island make no freaking sense.
How so? Are you just spoiled because of Tokyo Jungle?
No, just like there's no like reason how Sumatran tigers, pro tip, they live on Sumatra. Komodo dragons and dingoes all live in the same place.
It's what happens is It's like Metal Gear Solid 3, right? Where like you're finding all kinds of different crabs, like things that wouldn't possibly be found in this area of like the Ukraine, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
But you learn to really, really hate freaking Komodo dragons.
Well, no, you just have to make sure that you run, you make tight turns because they can't turn as quickly as you.
Oh, see,
they only see movement.
you gotta pick one and stay with it.
Where you just, I don't know, I freaking hate those things.
Yeah,
It's funny. The animals are much more annoying enemies than the actual people.
Right.
So.
Neat. So you said you're about 2/3 of the way through. That is that is a thing. I will be curious to see what you think of the story as it kind of reaches its end. Because, I mean, if you remember last week when we were talking about spending time playing games that you weren't really that crazy about, there was somebody who said, I finished it just begrudgingly. So I'm just wondering if there's a point where it goes all Zen on us. Zen in the in the Half-Life sense.
Yeah, I'm going to be interested to see, because right now it's kind of at the point where, like you said, you know, a lot of the, right now to me, it's still, you know, sort of flirting with, you know, whether it's going to be a game that's, you know, very, very dark,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, is kind of more balanced. And so I'm interested to see how they wrap it up.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool.
And then I've also been screwing around with Dark Souls some. Was inspired by listening to some of the Bonfire Side chats. Do I have that name right?
Yes.
Thing. So I'm a good deal of the way through plundering Darkroot Garden.
Okay.
I haven't killed off the giant moth yet, and I haven't fought in the gargoyles yet.
Okay.
But I went back and killed off all the all the black knights, and ended up getting the black knight greatsword to drop.
Oh yeah.
So now I'm trying to decide if that's worth investing in.
It is a great it is a very useful sword if you're specced for it. You have a better chance of actually successfully using just the Black Knight sword, which is actually a great sword, and then the Black Knight great sword is an ultra great sword. So that's a little bit confusing. The Black Knight sword is one of the best swords in the game. Right. It is has a wonderful move set, et cetera, et cetera. I don't have too much experience with the great sword, but you just have to really, really be willing to do man mode with it, which is, you know, two-handed like a boss, right?
Yeah. See, my thing is, I love
you like to turtle up.
Well, yeah, and I love the shield and longsword, particularly for its thrust attack.
Yeah, yeah.
But the thing is, there's not, at least according to the wiki, there's not that many end game long swords.
No. Most of them go up to the great sword. Although if you're willing to farm, you can actually go for the Baldur side sword.
I have that. Sorry, I farm a lot. I mean, I'm currently running with. It's kind of annoying. I generally, and this is why in my first playthrough, I get to the first blacksmith and then just spend a good deal of time farming.
Mm-hmm.
And so from that, I've built up like 10 liquid humanity.
Okay, so your drop is real high. Yeah.
Right. So that's what I did is I got to 10 is where the item drop. Stops giving you the bars, so that's why I then went and did the Black Knights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's the thing. The only problem now is you can't kindle fires until you get the until later in the game, right?
You can kindle them up to 10. You have to get the right of kindling from a later boss.
Okay.
Yeah, you can go and get it now. You just have to, you know, fight your way. It's
that's
better.
It's is in the, that in the crypt or whatever?
It's in the catacombs. Yeah, it would benefit you to get. God, I can't believe we're diving into this. It would benefit you to kill the Moonlight Butterfly, because that gives you the ember to make a divine weapon. And
I do have the Astora Straight Sword though.
Oh yeah, then that is a viable way to go about things. Yeah. So Dark Souls, Dark Souls, Dark Souls. Is that all?
Actually, I did have a question about Dark Souls. I cannot for the life of me. Remember how the heck you get down to the lower undead burg?
You have to. There's a key by the gate of the parish, and then it's the door by Solaire.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So anyway.
Multiplayer.
So yeah, multiplayer. This is a free play round, which is my way of saying I want you to ask me the questions, ask us the questions, as opposed to us asking you stuff. So yeah, we have two here. Let me pull up one because it's in a different area. Well, first, Gary is a wise guy. He asked me, "Who do you think you are, and where do you get off?" My name's Cole.
Napoleon and mostly the bathroom.
Je suis Napoleon. Jesus.
Sorry.
So anyway, moving on as rapidly as possible. let's see. Man, people are really responding to that backlog image, man. So Sasha Mouse58 on Twitter. Longtime fan of the show and the friend of the network. Hi there. She says, What was a game you were really excited about but ended up being a disappointment?" Ah, man, there's a bunch. I don't know. Okay, can you guys answer one?
Yeah, Star Wars Force Unleashed. Talking about that last week totally opened the scab.
It just let it just come bubbling out.
Well, I guess it was before I started looking into who makes games and like what, you know. And so the last game I had played was like Knights of the Old Republic 1 and Knights of the Old Republic 2. I'm like, oh, this is awesome. I'll play another one of those games. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, no, this game is terrible. So.
Yeah.
I'd say Homefront.
Okay. Any elaboration?
That's all I'm going to say.
That's all it deserves. No, I really liked the overall setting. You know, the overall story. A lot of the things they did with it. You know, the weapons they chose to. You know, the fact that they chose to include predominantly civilian weapons.
Mm-hmm.
There's just, you know, a lot of things I liked about it. The problem was its gameplay wasn't good. Just it, you know, the completely unquantifiable. It just didn't feel right.
Yeah, yeah. That was one of the bigger like complaints that I heard about too. Is just that it's like the mechanics weren't there. You know.
Yep.
Yeah. I've got two from a really long time ago, you know, but it's kind of a once bitten, twice shy kind of thing. So I remember being very young in the days of the Sega Genesis, and this, you know, I was like in late kindergarten, early first grade. I was living in my grandma's trailer, so that puts it around first grade. And the very first Power Rangers game was going to come out. Again, I was six, and I was like, awesome, great, I'm so excited about this. We got it out, and it's like, I went and bought it. Awesome. But it's a fighting game. Oh, okay, what? Oh, I beat it with every character in one night. Oh, and this is my only game for months. I'm so sad now at this. So that led me to not trust licensed games at all. And I don't know when I started getting GamePro magazines, but it was very shortly after that. So I don't know if like it was going to like, okay, I'm going to research. I can't tell you if that was like a conscious decision on the part of 6-year-old Cole. But, yeah.
Cole, I like how 6-year-old Cole is at the same mental equivalent as 20-year-old Ben Merkel.
Oh, yeah.
Womp, womp.
Yeah. oh gosh, the other one, kind of in the same vein. I don't understand like what happened. It was really shortly after I got my PlayStation 2, And I was a big fan of Gundam Wing. This was around the time that Toonami was a real big thing. You know, it was a thing, a time and place. And the first Gundam game that came out, like, it wasn't a Gundam Wing game. It was, like, based on the earlier ones, so the robots weren't as cool. Gundam Journey to Jabiro, it was just so bad. It was so clunky. It was basically like take Armored Core, like those mechanics, but take away anything good about like customizing your mech, and then like make it even like worse. And that's what it was. And I was just kind of like, okay, I'll begrudgingly play this, and then I just went and traded it in. So same mistake.
Well, they've since made some really good ones.
Have they?
Yeah, they. I think they made like. One in the Dynasty Warriors.
They've made
series.
Two of them, but I ignore them because Dynasty Warriors.
I really liked Dynasty Warriors.
Okay.
But.
Yeah. Hmm. So yeah. I mean, both of those were licensed, and when I was very young, I'd like to say that I'm, you know, better at it, but I don't think that any of them have been as colossally disappointing. Like there's a whole subcategory of this insofar as like there are games that are like they were different than you expected them to be, but you still really enjoyed them. So I remember saving up for a long time to buy Dr. Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine, the Sonic spinoff, not quite knowing what it was, but I'd seen screenshots of it, and they had characters from the Sonic cartoon. It's like awesome, great. You know, I was still in elementary school at this point. Again, Sega Genesis time. I get it out, and it's a puzzle game. It's like Tetris. It's you know, it's Puyo Puyo Pop as ultimately what you know you find out that it was. I was like, man, this is really great. I love this. I like Tetris, but now it's big and colorful and on my TV. Great. And so yeah, it wasn't what I expected, but I still really enjoyed it.
I was going to say, isn't it weird how, like, back when you were a kid, like, there wasn't really an internet, so you kind of had to, like, buy games based on what your friends liked or just what the box said.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no real review system in place.
Or just by the cover art, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember I bought Mission Impossible for the N64, like, knowing nothing about it.
I remember that being okay.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. I'm not going to knock it. But yeah. I just remember buying it totally cold feet, like just not knowing anything about it. But mm-hmm. other than like I liked the movie Mission Impossible. So,
yeah. Huh. Neat. Let's see here. Murph Murphy of the Dork Knight podcast. He has a question. I believe we may have talked about this at some point before, but we might as well go back over it. He asks, what dead IP would you have rise from the grave? He says, I'd love to see something done with Suikoden. Let me see here. He linked an article, which I didn't look at. It's from the Penny Arcade Report. Sonic and All-Stars Racing transformed isn't a celebration, it's a funeral. Oh, they're talking about the new Sonic Racing game. Man, that was another one. Sonic R, that was a real piece of crap for the Sega Saturn. but yeah. So Suikoden, tactical RPG, born and died on the PlayStation 1. I think there was a third one released with the PlayStation 2. But yeah. I know mine. I've said mine, and some people disagree with this. I'd like to see the Chrono series come back. I love Chrono Cross a lot. Chrono Trigger is pretty good too.
People will probably have more controversy about that statement.
Yeah. No, it's good. See, it's good. Good.
Oh, I feel like that's one I almost want not to come back simply because it's so good. And I don't want it to be George Lucas.
Well, George Lucas or modern day JRPG'd, right? Yeah. Kind of like if they brought it back, they'd probably do it like the Tales games or something like that, or Star Ocean, just like something like any of these things, which may be perfectly fine, but just like they're modern JRPGs and they don't play like I'm used to. So it'd just be kind of like, you know, they would, man, I don't even want to say Final Fantasy 13 did, cause I actually kind of like that game. But yeah, so if they were to make my ideal version of that, which would be Chrono Cross, but more, then yes, I would I would be all over it. But
you would like it if they made an ideal version of it.
Yes. Well, okay. So basically, it's kind of like taking Chrono Cross and burying it in the pet cemetery. You know, like it's going to come back weird and like evil. So. So if the pet cemetery would work, then yes.
Gotcha.
Okay. Yeah. How about you guys?
Oh, Dave, do you I've got my one. I always say.
Oh
which
yeah,
is,
I know what it is.
Imagination.
Yes, the Game Boy Color card game.
But I think for a more interesting one, a game that died an untimely death that I actually thought had a lot of potential was Auto Assault.
Yeah, that was one of those NCSoft games that it was put out in the glut of a lot of others. It was like right after Guild Wars.
Right, and it was basically a MMO Twisted Metal.
Yes.
Okay.
But, you know, had a fairly interesting world, you know, had... You know, I feel like the idea of MMO game that actually has good gameplay has a lot of potential.
There may be gold in them hills.
Well, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, the you know it wasn't quite as optimized as it needed to be, and they just didn't. They didn't quite have. Like a good reason, there's no reason that you need to group with people, and unlike modern MMOs, it wasn't quite modern enough to just embrace the fact that everyone's going to solo until endgame.
Right.
So it was kind of, you know, it just didn't quite have some of the gameplay was good, it didn't quite have some of the things you need to hold it together.
Right.
But
I don't know if I have a great answer, but I don't know if the Knights of the Old Republic, I guess it's not dead because they just came out with the Old Republic, yeah. But
well, that's,
I don't know.
The thing about that I would like to remind you of, it's free to play now, so you can go through all the single player stuff and get a pretty good story from it, from what I understand. Like, if there was a Mac client, I would definitely dedicate like a couple weeks to that.
I know. I
just started the smuggler campaign and just play a little bit of it, and so far it's pretty good.
Really? Maybe. Yeah. I guess the issue for me is like I don't think I have a computer that would run it, but since I don't have a computer that can run Amnesia, I don't think I have a computer that can run the Old Republic.
Yeah, that'd do it, I think.
But outside of that, one, this is a very specific, very oddball thing. And I might have mentioned it before in our podcasting together, but did you guys ever play the Star Wars, the Clone Wars that came out? It came out with like Xbox and PlayStation 2 as like a free game if you bought the systems.
No. I only ever saw the box art.
I've never heard that.
Okay. It was pretty much like a throwaway game. It wasn't that great, but they had a multiplayer on it that was like pretty fantastic. And the way the multiplayer was is there were two bases on opposite ends of the map. And then they had these stations kind of scattered between them. And if you would sit inside the area of the station, it would automatically start building turrets. And as soon as it built four turrets, it would start building units as long as all four turrets were still up. And then you could send your units to either defend your base, to attack the other person's base, or defend the outpost that they're at. Mm-hmm. But it was like a fantastic game. Think of it as like a tower defense game if you were one of the things and you could like build towers or something. You know, like
I thought they made like a third-person shooter that was like that.
Maybe. I don't know.
Didn't they make some Star Wars third-person shooter?
I mean, there was the Bounty Hunter game.
There were the Republic Commando games.
Yeah,
but that's first person. I don't know. It's been a lot of throwaway games in the Star Wars.
There's one we used to play that was a lot of fun. I remember.
You're thinking of Battlefront.
Yeah, Battlefront. That's it.
Yeah.
That was good. Was that similar idea?
Similar, yeah. I guess the idea they implemented a sort of like defense system or like staying at a base, like kind of fortified that bit. You know, like it made it kind of like a chess match against the other player, and so. Yeah, I thought it was a tremendous amount of fun, and I haven't seen any sort of game that used a similar mechanic like that since. So,
very cool.
Yeah.
Wow, seems like it's ahead of its time. Yeah, so I think that's the multiplayer. Thank you so much for asking those, especially on the short notice. I need to get better about putting those out, but
that's all right.
Yeah, no, it was a nice little compact thing. So if you want to watch for those, we have channels that you can go to. It's facebook.com/thelevelpodcast or just the duckfeed.tv Twitter where we put those calls out and you can respond to our questions or ask us questions of your own. Do you guys want to do the end bosses?
Sure.
Yeah.
The end boss.
So end bosses. I have one that follows directly from last week's, but I want to know if you guys have any.
I have a pretty small one.
Go ahead. Go.
All right. We talked a good deal last time about the tone of Resident Evil 6.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw on Facebook a comment from a friend that I felt really summed up what I had played in Resident Evil 4 and 5 and then what I've observed from 6. He basically, his summary of how he felt about the games was, you know, Resident Evil 4, you know, I'd rather rot in the cellar forever than keep moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
5, you know, draw the heavy weapons and proceed with caution. And then 6... Oh, yeah, boy. I brought my fist to this throwdown.
I like that.
I felt like that seems to kind of sum up the evolution of the gameplay.
I feel like the quality of the game is inversely proportional to the muscle size of the protagonist.
Yeah, but Leon and Jake aren't exactly that buff. It's Chris who's the fly in the ointment, right?
I guess so.
Yeah.
It seems like he's the character. It seems like, you know, there's reviews where, you know, oh, the multiplayer is, you know, perfect. But, you know, this single player they tacked on sucks, so I'm going to take 2 stars off the review.
Yeah.
It almost seems like it's that, where it's like, if they had just not included him at all, people probably would have liked the game better.
Who knows?
I mean,
I don't know.
Grant, this is entirely from the outside looking in.
Yeah.
Maybe they needed to add more boulders to Uppercut.
There's a scene that's kind of equivalent to that in the sixth. Yeah, it's real goofy, but it's not quite as bad. Like it takes what they intended for that to be, and like actually like makes it work kind of.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm in an abusive relationship with this game. So
I don't mind uppercutting boulders as long as I know ahead of time that that's the tone of the game. Like then it's like, yeah, this is hilarious. But when you're like, this will be like Resident Evil 4, where it's like dark and mysterious and interesting, and then it's none of those things.
None like, of those things at all. Yeah. I'm gonna go on to mine. So last week I was incredibly sick when we were recording the show. It was all I could do not to throw up during it. It was real bad. So I left the recording session and I turned on my Apple TV and I watched the new Lemon Grab episode of Adventure Time.
Yeah.
Have you Epic. Seen it?
Yeah.
No.
It's called All Your Fault.
Yeah,
it's like if somebody made. I'm paraphrasing Merlin Mann when he says it's like if somebody made a Dungeons and Dragons module and then forced you to eat mushrooms and confront your fear of lemon grab. So this is an episode of the show Adventure Time. If you haven't watched it, you shame
terrifying.
On you. Lemon Grab is my favorite character. This is just like a whole, it's kind of a logical conclusion of what happens when you have
two Lemon Grabs.
when you have two Lemon Grabs, who have like a creation complex anyway. And like an inability to rule and like an inability to be around anybody and give them the power to make other Lemon Grabs. It's real messed up. And like it was so upsetting. Like, I'm not a nightmare person, but I was like sick and I had like nausea medicine on me and things like that. I was paralyzed by the antiemetic that I was taking, you know, just kind of like nausea medicine tends to make you drowsy, right? So it's kind of like, okay, I'll fall asleep. So I watched this right before I fell asleep, and I opened my eyes and I looked up at the ceiling, and I don't want to say I had Lemon Grab faces poking out, but there were faces poking out of my ceiling. I was having a night terror. I couldn't move. Sleep paralysis. There were faces coming out of my ceiling screaming at me, and I have to blame it on like it wasn't like explicitly Lemon Grab, but I was so unsettled by this thing. It's so good. Go like find it and watch it.
Wait, I love how your lead in is, this gave me effing light night terrors. It was awesome.
You should watch
go
it.
Watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like the letter, and I like when they walked in a circle. The direction on that was fantastic.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I think the Lemon Grab stuff is the only thing I've actually seen of Adventure Time. Is the rest of the show equally terrifying?
It's fantastic.
No, it's great.
It's more joyful than that. Like nothing is quite as disturbing as that. I mean, yes, there is some stuff that's pretty disturbing, but most of it's like a celebration of like kid logic, you know?
Okay.
Yeah, it's delightful. It's a wonderful show.
I'm not coming back.
Oh man, how about you, Ben?
I just want to talk about Adventure Time now. My end boss is I enrolled in a class for Coursera. Have you guys heard of Coursera before?
Yes, this is a free online university kind of class taking thing.
Yeah, you can just sign up for free classes.
Yeah,
with legit professors at legit universities.
A couple of states are trying to make it illegal.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
I know, right?
That's rather 1984.
Just a bit. What class are you taking, Ben?
It's an algorithms class.
Ooh, neat.
For fun.
Ooh, that's something I've been meaning / putting off taking for.
Dude, it's a 6-week course. It started yesterday, but you have 2 weeks to turn an assignment, so now's the time, dude.
Yeah, that's one of my deepest fears is that's something that's theoretically supposed to be very important to my chosen field of study, and that I'm horribly unequipped to actually do.
How much programming do you do? I mean,
that's what I do.
Okay. Oh, you exclusively do programming?
Well, I guess I exclusively run around and deal with customers that want me to be programming and dealing with their problems, but I'm supposed to be programming.
Well, yeah, I'm supposed to be writing, but I spent, you know, 3 hours on the phone today with one client. You know, yeah, so client work, Uber, all this. That's cool. So you just go in there and say, "Hey, dog, I want in on this," and then you just like commit to taking. Like, and that's what you have to write on. Dog, I mean, trust. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's legit.
So then, do you get any sort of meaningful credit from it in terms of like?
They give you like a certificate if you complete the class. So
cool.
Just a little something, a little ditty, you know.
I'll have to take a look and see what kind of classes are being offered.
Yeah. What's this called?
Coursera.
Coursera. I guess that would make more sense.
Like a pirate?
There's like coursework era. So Coursera.
Okay. I will. Even though you obviously know the link, I will put this in.
Yeah,
it'll be.
I really respect their front page, because I have JavaScript disabled because I'm paranoid, and instead of the normal, you know, nice message, their message simply says, please use a modern browser.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Google does that all the time, too. Enabled. Yeah.
That made my day.
Huh. Well, fellas, we got to button it up.
Yep.
Bye. So that was The Level, a podcast for people who love video games, the 11th level specifically. So thank you so much for sticking around to this point. We really enjoy having you. What we can do, if you would like to help out the show, you can like us on Facebook. You can rate us or review us on iTunes. That is really helpful. We've got a couple more reviews trickling in that helps other people see us. If you would like to... support the show monetarily, you can go to duckfeed.tv/tipjar. If you're going to be buying anything off of Amazon, use that link right there. Click it, add whatever you want to your cart. Doesn't cost you anything extra, and we get a little kickback from that. And that covers the website hosting, the episode file hosting, all of that good stuff. It really helps us out.
Just out of curiosity, did I made a purchase this week? Did it register on
DuckFeed? Was it a Zelda book?
No.
Oh. Now, sometimes it takes a little while to show up, especially if it hasn't shipped yet. So, yeah, let's see here. I think that's about it as far as things you can do. So I'll say this for Dennis, our compatriot who is not here right now. Happy birthday.
Yeah. That's something they can do. They can wish him a belated happy birthday.
Yeah. Yeah. Do that on the Facebook group. I think you'll really get a kick out of that. He is at DFuria, D-F-U-R-I-A, on Twitter. My name is Cole Ross. I am your host. I am found at Cole Ross on Twitter, K-O-L-E-R-O-S-S. I know it's spelled weird. David?
I'm David Mysmith. I'm on Twitter at MoneySmith777.
Fantastic. And Ben?
My name's Ben Merkel, and I'm at Merkelizer.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, guys. And until then, watch out for Lemon Grab. He's going to get you.
Wow.
Too young. Actually... one second. I'm hearing pounding. One second.
The mob finally came for Cole.
Bum, 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 bum.
Hopefully Dennis got good at editing podcasts.
Well. Okay, I'm back. It was somebody else.